It's time to go in-depth with Ask the Chief. D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier takes your calls and emails on the issues that affect you. Now live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, your hosts, Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
Here's how you can get a question in to the Chief and to our special guest, Mayor Vincent Gray, also in the studio this morning. The number to call, 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Email us at WTOP.com. You can submit questions on our Facebook page as well, or via Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief.
And we appreciate both you coming in, Mayor Gray, Chief Lanier. I know it's been a very, very busy few days for everybody in this room because of Sandy. So let's talk about Sandy. And Mayor Gray, let me start with you. We know last night we had some flooding down along the Potomac. We've been expecting the river crest. What can you tell us about the latest about how we weathered the storm last night?
Well, I think, you know, we expected the possibility of this, Mark, and our folks were as red as they could possibly be for this. I don't have a full assessment of what damage may have been caused by the flooding, but we had none up to that point. And, you know, just let me say that the folks in the city, all of our agencies did an extraordinary job of dealing with this. I think we're all happy that the storm wasn't any more serious than it was, but it was serious. And, you know, from trees being down to, lights, traffic lights being out to everything imaginable, I think the city was ready for it and we responded as effectively as we could.
You know, Chief, during these kinds of emergencies, we hear from a lot of the other agencies, not so much the police department, who is usually running toward danger. What was your role? What were the police officers doing during Sandy? Did you have more officers on duty during the storm? How did you guys deal with this?
Well, I held over the evening shift into midnights so we'd have extra officers, because the peak for the storm, the wind is what we were concerned about, because when the wind was supposed to be at its peak was between 7 p.m. and 2 a.m. So what I did is the guys that were supposed to get off at 11 o'clock, I held them over until 2, just in case we got that big surge of calls. And there was a little bit of an increase in calls for trees down and things like that, but I just want to make sure we had enough people that if we started to see, you know, that dramatic spike, that we'd have the people to handle it. So they stayed over, and most of what we're doing is, you know, coning off areas where you had wires down to keep people away from the wires, trees down, and then traffic control at intersections without lights.
We're going to get to our calls from our listeners. We got a lot more questions about Sandy and recovering and what to do now after the storm, after a look at traffic.
It's D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier and you, Ask the Chief on WTOP. Now back to Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
Chief Lanier is here along with special guest Mayor Vincent Gray in the studio. We'll be getting to more of your phone calls at 877-336-1035. We'll be getting to the phone shortly, 877-336-1035. You can email your question at WTOP.com or send a question in via Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheChief.
Mayor Gray, a lot of people are cleaning up now, and we'll probably spend this weekend cleaning up a lot of debris in people's yards and whatnot. What are they to do with it? What will the city pick up? How do we facilitate this cleanup?
Well, we've actually already started, Mark. We would ask people, and a lot of it's limbs, of course, and perhaps cut up pieces of trees that may have come down. We would ask them to put them in the tree box. And DPW and DDOT will work together to get them picked up as quickly as we possibly can. We ask them not to put them in the gutter in the street, because obviously that will impair other cleanup operations. But it should be only a matter of a couple of days for us to be able to get those up.
Do people need to call and let you know they got a pile of debris, or is it just you're just going to kind of like Christmas tree pickup, you're just going to get through it as you get through it?
Yeah, we'll get through it. But if people want to, if there's something exceptional about what needs to be picked up, we'd ask them to call 311. And we'll get somebody out there to get it up.
And let me ask you about now the big stuff, trees. We knew that, you know, not as much as during derecho, but still hundreds of calls about trees down and and big tree limbs. How many big trees do you have that are down that are either on homes, blocking roads, that are creating some kind of problem throughout the city?
We had a total of about 200 trees that came down, and obviously some were bigger than others. We had one up in the Nebraska Avenue area that was about 12 feet. In diameter, just absolutely huge, and probably, I don't know, 75 to 100 years old. I think, Mark, we've already gotten a lot of the big stuff out of the way. They started even before the storm ended. Once the winds started to die down, DDOT, and in particular the Urban Forestry Administration, had crews out already, and we had contractors that we had worked with to engage them, to deploy them as soon as the opportunity presented itself. So we really are in the latter stages now of getting these trees out.
Chief, how did your facilities and your cars, I mean, did you sustain any damage at any of the police stations and your police vehicles?
No, we had some leaks. I mean, with the driving wind and the rain, we had some leaks coming in around windows and stuff like that, but nothing serious. All of our facilities did very well.
And what do you do as far as power for your stations? Do you have backup power if the power goes
out?
Oh,
yes. We ran tests on all the generators in the days before the storm. That was the great part about having an advance warning. We made sure everything was gassed up in advance, and we tested all the generators. And you know, every now and then on those tests, you find one that has a timing issue or something that's off, and they have to reset them. So we're ready.
Mayor Gray, we still hear about people without power in our region. How about in the District of Columbia? Do you still have residents and businesses without power?
No. As of 9 o'clock last night, all the power had been restored. We had, as you well know, Mark, because you were there, at the last press conference we had, Pepco was there, and I certainly was pleased to make mention of the what I thought was the excellent performance of Pepco during this storm. Again, as of last night at 9 o'clock, everyone in the District of Columbia had power restored. Best estimates that we got, there were 34,000 people over the course of this storm in the District of Columbia who lost power. So it was not an inconsiderable number by any stretch of the imagination.
You know, it wasn't so long ago we were sitting here kicking Pepco around about just, you know, how bad their reaction was to a big storm. Why this complete turnaround? What was, I mean, it was obviously not as big a storm, obviously, this time. But why do you think, what made this work so much better this time than past storms?
I think the opportunity to prepare for it. You know, so many of these incidents, they hit you spontaneously, and you have to then be able to react to them right at the moment. We knew this storm was coming a few days ago. We've been working even closer with Pepco also. We appointed a task force that is chaired by CEO Joe Rigby and our city administrator, Alan Liu, to work on reliability issues. So there's been a lot of close working efforts that have been going on over the last 2 or 3 months. But even in the course of the days leading up to this, Pepco, as we understand it, had reached out to up to 3,700 additional people to bring them in to be able to address this. And a lot of those folks were on site when the storm hit. They were deployed out. And as a result, the restoration of power moved much more quickly and efficiently.
Are we out of the woods now as far as flooding? The Potomac River is the worst behind us. What are the experts telling you, Mayor Gray?
I think we are, but we want to be absolutely sure. excuse me, Mark. We knew that in the 48 hours at least, in the aftermath of the height of the storm, that there was certainly a potential for flooding. We were concerned that it would, you know, crest up above 11 or 12 feet, and if it did, we would have flooding. And, of course, we had, you know, some effects of that last night. I think in the next 24 hours, we will probably pass through the likelihood of any flooding that will take place, and then we will finalize the cleanup operations.
You know, there was no flooding in Bloomingdale, in LaDroite Park areas, in Ward 5, and where people had seen just horrible flooding over the past year multiple times. And I asked you this question the other day, but I think it's a good idea for you to tell as many people this as possible. There are people out there who really believe that because Bloomingdale didn't flood this time, that whatever was causing the flooding in the past has been fixed, whether somebody was turning on a valve that didn't need to be turned on or there was a clog. And there were people in the neighborhoods who really believe that, yes, something was amiss, it's been fixed, and now we're past that problem. You and the D.C. Water executive say that's not the case.
It's not. I wish it were the case, of course, and we'd be enormously pleased to be able to announce that. In this instance, what we did, again, with the preparation, we had teams go out. We worked closely with the D.C. Water. We got the catch basins cleaned out. We had storm drains cleaned. We got leaves up off the street. DPW did an excellent job with that. So we did the best we could to create a set of conditions that would not lead to further flooding. And in this instance, it worked. But that doesn't mean that if we had a huge downpour day after tomorrow, with water having accumulated very quickly, Mark, that we wouldn't have the potential for flooding conditions. In addition to that, you know, we went out and knocked on every door. in Bloomingdale, and there probably are, I don't know, anywhere from 750 to 1,000 homes in that flood vulnerability area. And in the aftermath, the same thing was done. We're going to continue to work closely with people. And I should mention, too, just again, I know you know this, but we have a task force that's working on solutions to this, both long-term solutions, and we know what the long-term solution is, but we can't ask people to wait until that is completed. We are working now on short-term solutions. There are backflow preventers that DC Water has made available to people that are now installed in some of the homes, and there are other things that we're looking at. The task force report will be out at the end of December, so we've got a couple more months, and we know that there will be some things we can do in the short term.
D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray, D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here taking your calls, emails, tweets, any questions you have. When we come back, we'll find out how Halloween went. Mayor Gray, let me wrap up and close the loop on our Sandy questions here. One of the things that people are faced with, and WTOP did a story on a family yesterday, is when a big tree on city property falls onto private property, whose responsibility does that become? What is the process for getting that taken care of?
Well, if it's a city tree, it's our responsibility, Mark. And we've had, trees to fall from public property onto private property. And frankly, we've even helped some people out who were in difficult straits with a tree that was on private property that may have fallen into public property. We've helped them to try to get that out of there. I know we had a situation yesterday where I think there was some confusion about the insurance company and when the family wanted the tree removed and whatnot. And we're certainly sorry for that. The DDOT came out, looked at the tree, thought that the family didn't want the tree removed until their insurance company had come. I think they misunderstood. But we came back in a matter of hours and then got it removed.
So if a city tree falls onto public property, can the property owner just have that removed to expedite the process, pay a contractor to do it, and then get reimbursed by the city? Or do they have to wait for the city to come and do it?
Well, we would prefer, obviously, that they contact us on 311. And again, if you use this experience as an example, it's just a matter of hours. And by the way, so people know, we actually use contractors ourselves in order to expedite the process. It isn't just public employees who are doing this. We have a number of contractors who we work with, and they come out and essentially do the same thing that a resident would have done if they engaged a contractor directly themselves.
Chief, I ran into you last night in Georgetown, always the hot spot for Halloween night where everybody likes to go and play. Tell us how things went in Georgetown and overall throughout the city.
Well, as you noticed, we had lots of police officers down there. There were a lot of officers deployed there and all around the city. So things went really well. I mean, we didn't have really any incidents in Georgetown. The crowds were large. By the end of the night, I still don't think they were as large as they were last year, but there were still pretty good-sized crowds there. But there was huge crowds in a lot of other places. Chinatown was, like, empty, which was kind of surprising. But I saw just huge crowds over off of 10th and East Capitol. There's lots of, you know, neighborhood haunted houses and really just big, big crowds. Everybody in costume looked like a lot of fun. So I rode around the whole city all night until about 1:30. So everything went really well. Quiet.
Following MPD tweets, I counted about 20 incidents of armed robberies last night.
No, we had in the 24-hour period, we had 14. Last night we had some of those were duplicate tweets with different locations. Last night during the trick-or-treating bewitching hour, we had about 9.
And is that average for any given
night? That's
about
average.
I mean, so people aren't using costumes as a way to run
around
the city?
I mean, and a couple of them were snatching bags of candy. I know at least two that I saw.
And there was a homicide last night?
We did have a homicide last night.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, we don't know much right now. We, you know, do know that the victim is an adult. He was shot multiple times. When I got on the scene, they were still talking to several people who were potentially witnesses. So hopefully we'll get something out of that.
Do you have a suspect in this?
We're working on a couple things.
This is how she does us, Mayor Gray.
That's good police work, Chief. Excellent.
Let me ask you about some other past crimes. I asked you last month, the beating on Eastern Market, the gentleman who was beaten there. You caught three suspects. Have they been linked to other crimes yet? I know there was talk that possibly they were responsible for other beatings and robberies.
So right now we've identified, in addition to the three, another two guys that this group of five would, over the course of, looks like at least a couple of months, different members of the group would go out together at different times. But we've linked them now to several cases. I think we're up to nine. And the investigation is still ongoing. And
so let me be clear. The three that you've arrested, there are two other suspects who are at large?
No, we have them, too.
You have it. So you've arrested five people.
We've arrested five. I mean, the investigation's still going on, but we've linked that group of five in various different combinations to about nine cases, all of which where the victims were beaten. So pretty
bad. And have
they
been charged in these crimes yet?
They have in some cases, but through this investigation, there'll probably be additional charges.
And what can you tell us about overall violent crime statistics? The last time you were here last month, we saw that while overall crime is going down, homicide going down, violent crime is inching up. Well, at least last month was inching upward.
Crime overall is like up about 2%. Violent crime, really, we've got our robberies down now to about a 5% over last year, and that's been a fight every day. What we're really targeting, and talking with the mayor and other members of the cabinet, looking at trying to find some way to really target robbery suspects that cause injury to the victims. So there really should be a whole different view on how you view somebody who commits a robbery who just takes your property versus somebody who injures you. Because we've seen groups now like this group I just talked about who unnecessarily assault victims and cause pretty significant injury. So we're working on some things now where we can make some changes in the law to target those folks.
So where are we trending on violent crime statistics?
Violent crime, I think we're up about 6% overall. Robberies were up about 5%.
And why do you think violent crime is going up when other crime categories are going down?
Well, we've had a pretty big jump in domestic assaults. So ADW, domestic assaults, are up pretty significantly. I mean, the good thing is those cases are always closed. I mean, because the suspect is always known in a domestic violence assault, there's always an arrest either on the scene or through a warrant. So they're, very high closure rate. But we see a lot more domestic assaults. We've seen a lot less lethal domestic assaults. We've only had four homicide cases that were domestic this year. So that's really a big problem.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray here taking your questions on Ask the Chief and Ask the Mayor. Chief, let me finish up on crime stats. Last month when you were here, we talked about the fact that your website, which I am a big fan of your crime map, has been down now for more than a month.
And it went down on September 17th. So.
And it's still down. Why is that down?
Well, we moved to a new records management system, data warehouse, new automated field reporting, and it combined four different systems into one. So the data transfer literally... This process has been going on for 2 years, and the data transfer took place on September 16th. And we noticed because the crime mapping function, the crime maps application that you were referring to, even though we had a link on our website to it, is actually a jointly managed site by police and Octo. And what happened with the new system is that the interface was just totally skewing numbers. Even internally now, because of the transfer of the data in the interface, we're having some problems with duplicate reporting, duplicate arrest numbers. So even right now, the stats that I'm using internally to look at crime, we know there's about 300 reports in there that are duplicates that need to come out. So I have, a team of people going through those reports now and trying to pull out duplicates so that we know our numbers are right. But it's just going to take another month or so to get it right.
Last month, when we talked about this, it was after Emily Miller at the Washington Times had written...
It was a conspiracy. I took it down because of her article.
there are people who think that maybe that was the case, that it came down right after she put that article up. You took exception last month with her reporting. She has since written in response to that, again asserting that you're cooking the books when it comes to crime statistics, that you pick and choose the numbers that you use depending on the audience that you're talking to, and the evidence is that you still haven't posted the crime map back up.
Well, I mean, I can't control the technology problem. I met with the vice president of Intergraph yesterday, who is overseeing this project to integrate our new records management system. And I told him when I start getting people that are claiming that I'm cooking the books because the crime maps application's down, I'm going to send them all to him. So maybe I'll let Emily give him a call.
But you know, there it's a legitimate question to ask that you do. I mean, it's almost like keeping two sets of books, because there are the FBI database that goes by a different definition of what crimes are compared to the DC code. And so depending on which one you use, it differs the numbers. Is that correct?
Of course. But every police department in the country uses both. And the only reason you would use the UCR is if you're comparing. It's the only method to compare one jurisdiction to another. And it's not even a really good method, honestly, to compare, because everybody's laws are a little bit different. So like in the COG meeting, when we talk about crime in the region, we have to use UCR because that's the only way to equalize crimes. What's defined as a robbery in Prince George's County, Maryland, might be a theft in the District of Columbia. So it's the best way to equal out numbers. It's not that you pick and choose. You have to use UCR when you compare jurisdiction to jurisdiction.
Let's get some calls in here now. We have Ernie is calling for the district. Ernie, you're on with the mayor and the chief.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Early voting was a disaster last weekend. And how is it that we're in the 21st century and the Board of Elections doesn't know how many voting machines to send out? And why does the voter guide give inconsistent days of operation and hours for early voting throughout the guide? This is a mess. We don't have enough hours for the weekend. You should put it on Sundays also.
Mayor Gray, the other day you were critical of the Board of Elections and early voting.
Yeah, I think we could have done a better job. I think the city could have done a better job. And I've talked to Cliff Tatum, who is the director of the Board of Elections. They have extended the hours during the week. They're going to 9 o'clock now. I think there should have been more machines as well. Voting has been historically one or another kind of trouble area in the past. And as we move up to this historic election that we're about to be engaged in nationally on Tuesday, which will be Election Day, we need to make sure that this is right. I was out on Saturday and actually walked through a voting line, talked to a lot of people who had been in that line for a very long time. People were unhappy about the length of time that they had to wait. So I learned firsthand, you know, what people's sentiments were. And it just really it doesn't make sense that people would have to be in line 2.5-3 hours to early voting. I mean, it gives new meaning to early voting, doesn't it?
Have you voted yet?
I have not. I'm going to vote on Election Day.
Chief, what is the role that police play on Election Day?
Just ballot box security. I mean, we do some increased security at sites. Some of that's done by Protective Services Division. Some's done by MPD, and we'll do escorts to the ballot box.
Let's get another call. We have George. He's calling from the district. You're on, George. Go ahead.
Yes. I have a problem with dump trucks coming through the back of our house. We're in the 4900 block of North Rock Creek Church Road. There's a sign saying no trucks over 1.25 ton. And all day long, we have these dump trucks from Santos Construction Company coming through, going to the cement plant. And I'm surprised that no one has ticketed any of them. They're from Silver Spring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we send the motor carrier unit up there quite often. Although the district patrol units, I know exactly what you're talking about. We send the motor carrier enforcement unit up through Hawaii Avenue, off North Capitol, the concrete place up there that brings a lot of those big heavy trucks through. And we'll send them back up if they're coming back through there again, through the 4900 block.
D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray, taking your questions on Ask the Chief and Ask the
Mayor. Our special guest on Ask the Chief, D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray. Your chance to ask a question of Mayor Gray or Chief Lanier is right now. 877-336-1035 is the phone number. 877-336-1035. Email us at WTOP.com. Send a tweet with the hashtag AskTheChief.
Chief, we were just talking about Election Day. Do you have contingency plans? Are you worried about the possibility of any civil disobedience should President Obama lose and Mitt Romney win?
Yeah, we always have extra staffing available, and we have, you know, plans to deal with. I mean, obviously, civil disobedience in Washington, D.C. is not unusual. It's not something we haven't dealt with for many, many years. We don't have any information that would suggest something like that would happen, but we're prepared if it does.
Mayor Gray, what would it mean for the District of Columbia if President Obama lost?
Well, you know, the district supported the president. I think it was 92-93% of the vote he got in the last election. We you know, I think you'll be highly supported again in this election. But, you know, we've had Democratic presidents, we've had Republican presidents, and the city is quite, you know, able to adapt to working with whoever the president is. Obviously, Mark, one of the things that we want to have happen is to be able to get budget autonomy, to get legislative autonomy, voting rights, all of the things that come with being a citizen in the United States. And I think the perception is that we would fare better with a Democratic president than we would with a Republican president. But that is, whoever the president isn't going to change our zeal or our commitment to trying to make that happen.
Let's get another call in here. Kathy is calling from the district. Go ahead, Kathy, you're on.
Yes, my question is, since the District of Columbia has collected and raised so much money from speed cameras, traffic cameras, and they're like millions of dollars, I'm not sure of the exact amount, what is the reason for freezing the pay of so many, you know, hardworking government employees who won't, unfortunately, get to see, you know, the fruit, you know, of their labor?
Mayor Gray, $85 million a year in revenue.
First of all, and I don't want to make this a protracted explanation, but, Mark, you can't give a raise out based on one-time money. And that is, if I've got a dollar, let's say an extra dollar, once I use that dollar, then where is the next dollar going to come from if I've made a long-term commitment? One of the things that we did, and I was very pleased to be able to do that, was when we went through the issue, I was council chairman and then became the mayor. We had furloughs that we had introduced to try to balance the budget based on the CFO's indication that we were facing a $135 million deficit. Well, during my first year in office, we not only got through that, but we had a surplus. And one of the things that we did was we gave back the furlough dollars, $22 million we gave back to the employees. And we could do that, Mark, and to the caller, because that was one-time money. It wasn't as if we were doing it this year, next year, the year after. And I was pleased to be able to do that. I think that was unprecedented. We appreciated the employees working with us, and we wanted to be able to say to them, thank you very much.
Chief Lanier will tell you that every month she comes in here, she gets calls about the rate of the fines, that D.C. has the highest fines in the nation for photo enforcement. She's quick to point out that she doesn't make the laws, she enforces them.
But that's
them.
Not true, though.
Mayor Gray, what's not true?
We don't have the highest fines in the nation.
$250. There's no other jurisdiction in the country that
charges. That's on one citation, but across the board, the remainder of the citations were consistent with many other jurisdictions.
Mayor Gray, let me ask you about that. There are council members now who want to lower those fines, and you have one council member who says that the camera, Michael Brown, who says the camera should be placed along the D.C., Maryland, Virginia borders to target commuters. What do you say about that?
Well, my first response is this wasn't a money-raising approach in the first place. This was a public safety approach, and I've said that from the very beginning, that we were trying to slow people down. We've seen reductions in traffic fatalities, for example, and some of that, I think, is because we have measures that encourage people to slow down. So I think that's the first thing. It's a public safety approach. Now, secondly, with respect to the bill, I've said from the very inception of the introduction of that bill that we, too, are concerned about that. We have some thoughts on it. We don't do the revenue estimates. The revenue estimates on any measure is done by the CFO. We certainly didn't anticipate that we were going to have additional revenue coming in. We want to strike a balance between what is reasonable in terms of the fines, but also being able to continue to have an inducement to make sure that people observe our traffic laws.
What about Councilmember Brown saying that these should be used to target commuters from out of state?
Well, we're not trying to target anybody. First of all, we have said over and over again that this is not an approach to raise money. It's an approach to be able to get people to slow down. And that doesn't matter whether you live in the city or not live in the city.
Let me ask you about raising money. Rashearn Baker was sitting in that seat from Prince George's County yesterday. He very much wants residents to vote in favor of a casino in Prince George's County. That would be a casino right over the border from your jurisdiction. A lot of your constituents would end up going there. Do you favor a casino in Prince George's County?
I haven't taken a position on it one way or the other. I can tell you, though, that I don't favor putting casinos in the District of Columbia. I think we can raise money to be able to support ourselves here in the city in other ways, frankly. And if we were given the opportunity to have more authority over running our city, we could raise even more money than that.
Will a casino right over the border of D.C. have a negative impact on the District of Columbia, whether it be crime or your residents going over there and spending their hard-earned money in casinos?
Well, we don't know, of course. We'll have to see. But we have people who go to casinos now. They go to West Virginia. They go to Delaware. They participate. I haven't seen any untoward impact on crime in the District of Columbia. If they were closer, one could make an argument that might be the case, but we don't have any evidence at this stage.
Chief, what are your concerns about as far as law enforcement about a casino right over the border?
I don't have any concerns about it. I mean, I think there's a lot of different ways to look at it. There's a lot of different things that impact crime, but you know, at the same token, you know, people going to the casino over on the Prince George's County side could then decide to come over and do some touristy visits in the District of Columbia.
That would be true.
So.
D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray, D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier here taking your questions.
It's D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier and you, Ask the Chief on WTOP. Now back to Mark Seagraves and Mark Lewis.
Your final opportunity to get your question on the air, 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Send a tweet with the hashtag Ask the Chief.
Mayor Gray, there's been some discussion about food truck regulations that you have sent down that would allow the Department of Transportation to regulate where food trucks can operate. Food truck vendors are obviously very unhappy about this. What is your message to the people who clearly enjoy these food trucks? You go down there and the lines are almost like early voting lines to get up to some of these trucks.
Well, we are certainly trying to be able to ensure that food trucks will still be available to people, especially in the downtown areas and even further out, because you know, you look at what's going to happen with the Coast Guard, for example. We're sure that food trucks will be, you know, wanting to be there to be able to serve people. So, but we're trying to strike a balance, Mark. We're trying to strike a balance between making the opportunity available for true food trucks to do business, but also to be respectful of the, you know, the food operations that operate out of buildings also. I mean, there's a lot of angst on the part of restaurateurs about food trucks parking right in front of their
building. But why
building.
Not let the market determine this? Why let a government agency determine this?
But we've also seen, Mark, we've seen street vendors and whatnot, and we've seen the chaos that's been created with people fighting over spaces and whatnot. So we're trying to organize this in a way that allows commerce to continue, but also not wind up with a chaotic situation on our streets where people are literally fighting over a spot right there to be able to grab it.
Chief, do we know what the Nationals playoffs cost us as far as police protection around the ballpark?
We had about, I want to say it was about $18,000. I mean, we kind of redid schedules when we realized it was coming out of the local budget, so it was very little because there wasn't a lot of overtime involved in it, but it was about $18,000.
Mayor Gray, let me ask you about, you know, everybody has been seeing the ongoing investigations and scandals at City Hall. Jim Graham was just admonished by the Metro Board for violating their ethics. There are questions around Michael Brown and his campaign. The campaign finance just released an audit of Vincent Orange's campaign. You remain under investigation. Can you update us first on the investigation into your campaign? Have you been contacted, updated by prosecutors? Have you been interviewed?
There's nothing further that I can add, Mark. We've talked about this in innumerable times, and there's absolutely no information that I can provide at this stage. The city is moving on. I mean, you're around in the city every day. You know, you look at the barometers of whether a city is running well. You look at crime. You look at our financial condition. You look at how our educational programs are operating. You look at unemployment. We've gone, since I've been the mayor, we've gone from 11.2% unemployment down to 8.7%. Phenomenal drop. The economic development in the city is absolutely phenomenal. So I would look at the condition of the city at this stage. And frankly, if I were doing the evaluation, which of course I do, I would come away feeling like the city is doing quite well.
How about the U.S. Attorney's Office? At some point, do they need to end this and give people either a definitive answer, either file charges or close the investigation? At what point are the citizens being negatively impacted by a protracted investigation?
That's a decision they obviously will have to make. They do painstaking investigations of these issues, and that's a That's the conclusion that they will have to come to, Mark.
Washington City paper Loose Lips had a story about RBK is a contractor owned by Keith Lomax, a friend of former Mayor Adrian Fentes. And there are questions. He continues to enjoy very big government contracts. And there are questions raised whether he's actually doing any work. What is your administration doing about this?
Well, if somebody's not doing work, whether it be RBK or anybody else, they're not going to be able to retain those contracts, and they're certainly not going to get any additional contracts. One of the reasons why we created the Department of General Services was to be able to bring all of this work under one umbrella. And I think Brian Hanlon has done an excellent job of leading this new agency. It's 13 months old at this stage. And frankly, you're going to continue to see even more efficient activity on the part of government contracting.
Chief, when you were here last, you updated us on the investigation into Councilmember Brown's campaign funds, more than $100,000 missing. What can you tell us about that investigation?
Still same as last time, Mark. The investigation is ongoing. At any point, if we get to a point where we have sufficient evidence to charge someone, we will.
Are you any closer to figuring out what happened?
There's still investigative work to be done.
Let me ask you about a home invasion on Rhode Island Avenue where a woman was attacked. This really scared a lot of people. This is a brand new development over in a growing neighborhood.
And if I can encourage anybody listening, please go to our D.C. Police website, mpdc.dc.gov, and look at the YouTube video. We've got an outstanding video of this guy, and we're trying to find him. He about 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, he was knocking on doors in this apartment building, knocked on her door, our victim's door, as she cracked the door to see who was outside. He forced his way in. He attempted to sexually assault her, and when she fought him off, and she fought him off, he not only punched and kicked her, but he pulled a knife and stabbed her multiple times. I went to see her in the hospital 2 days ago, and she's just got multiple stab wounds all over her. So we really want to get this guy, and we've got great pictures and video of him. So please go to our website.
An isolated incident?
This is the kind of incident that just really is horrifying for police and terrifying for communities. We just don't see this, and this guy is dangerous. We really want to get him.
Mayor Gray, what do you say to the residents when you hear about a violent crime like this?
Well, first of all, it's obviously incredibly unnerving. And it's hard to just quote statistics because people obviously personalize this. We've obviously added another couple hundred in the last couple hundred police officers in the last, I would say, probably 15 months. We're looking at adding more officers. We want people also to be able to report unusual activity in their community. That's why we have 311. That's especially why we have 911. A lot of times, and the chief can speak to this better than I can, there are signs of things that may be about to go awry in a community, and we would ask people to report those to us. The chief has done a great job, I think, of deploying officers to areas where there may be problems. You look at the robbery intervention program that's been established, where robbery started to go up, a new team was formed, and they are deploying themselves now into areas where robberies had increased.
D.C. Mayor Vincent Gray, D.C. Police Chief Kathy Lanier, we appreciate you both coming in and updating
us
on everything. Thanks very much.
Mark.